translation. Thereafter, Bringu, the chief of the great sages, invited Lord Shiva to come to the sacrificial arena. Thus, the demigods, accompanied by the sage, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, all went to the place where the great sacrifice was being performed. Purport. The whole sacrifice arranged by King Daksha had been disturbed by Lord Shiva. Therefore, all the demigods present there, along with Lord Brahma and the great sages, specifically requested Lord Shiva to come and revive the sacrificial fire. There is a common phrase, Shiva Hina Yagya. Any sacrifice without the presence of Lord Shiva is baffled. Lord Vishnu is Yageshvara, the supreme personality in the matter of sacrifice. Yet, in each Yagya, it is necessary for all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, to be present. The text again. Thereafter, Bringu, the chief of the great sages, invited Lord Shiva to come to the sacrificial arena. Thus, the demigods, accompanied by the sages, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, all went to the place where the great sacrifice was being performed. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pashkatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So after this big disturbance in the sacrifice that had been done by the arrival of Lord Shiva, and as we remember, Daksha did not pay obeisances to Lord Shiva, and then a big fight of curses between the followers of Lord Shiva and the follower of Daksha took place, and then Shiva left. And later Daksha tried to make another sacrifice, but the verse here explained that actually without the presence of Lord Shiva, any sacrifice actually cannot be performed properly, cannot achieve his goal. So it's quite a simple verse. I thought today to link a little bit that verse with the principle of Yagya. Often when we hear Yagya, we just imagine the fire pit, the fire Yagya with the wood and the mantras. But actually the word Yagya is taking very, very big area, because Yagya actually means sacrifice. And today I would try to speak on a little bit on sacrifice. Sacrifice that we are doing in our devotional life. Many of us are now very much living in the temple or participating to temple life, and that's in one sense quite a type of sacrifice, especially when we see all the atmosphere around, especially in the town of Berlin, is just pushing the mind of everyone to go totally in the other direction, to go to the sense gratification direction. So by living already in the temple, by trying to practice Krishna consciousness, is already such a big sacrifice. But that's interesting to see what is often sacrificed in the beginning after some time become nectar, and especially when the sacrifice is done in connection with spiritual life. In the beginning we have to push ourselves, but then some taste comes, and when taste is there, then it's, we cannot so much call that sacrifice anymore. It's something that becomes very easy. So this aspect of sacrifice is actually very, very important in the life of the devotees. It is said that without making sacrifice, one cannot really make new steps in life. In our journey, we are making step-by-step advancement. It's like a gradual process. But without making some types of sacrifice, we just remain stuck in one place. Whenever we want to make new steps, we want to progress forward, we have to think of how we can do some new sacrifice. How can we sacrifice more of ourselves? And this we actually generate a strength that will help us to go forward. There is a saying that says, without pain, no gain. We need to go through some type of austerity, some types of sacrifice in order to have the gain. If we have our goal, but we are not ready to invest ourselves in order to reach the goal, we will actually never reach it. When we have the goal, we know there is a journey that goes to the goal. That means we will have to invest ourselves in order to reach the goal. The life of a devotee is based on sacrifice. And as much there is sacrifice, as much there is advancement. Or there is benefit. As long as we remain very comfortably in our comfort zone, it's actually very difficult to make some new steps. One has to make, to generate this energy of sacrifice, to go out of that comfort zone in order to make some new steps in spiritual life. In one lecture that Satchinandana's family gave in the Nishinga Kshetra farm for the Sankirtan festival, he spoke about the comfort zone, but he speak also of three other zones. He speak about the stretching zone and the stress zone. Sometimes we are in the comfort zone and we want to make some type of sacrifice, but if it's not properly regulated, we might come to the other opposite where we are in the stress zone. And this, I think, we can often see in our movement. Devotee doing many, 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 many things, but are completely lost. I mean, they do a lot of activities, but they lose the aim, why the activity is done. They are like under some type of transcendental stress. And often, when devotees come in that zone, they cannot stay for a long time, because if the proper consciousness is not behind the activities, there is no real taste. So even if the devotee is doing a lot that is in this stress zone, because of that overstress, he forgets the aim or forgets the attitude behind the external activities. And because of that, there is a loss of taste, and after some time the devotee will go back, most probably, to the comfort zone. But there is the stretching zone. And this is the zone where we make some reasonable new steps. Where we make some reasonable sacrifice. When we see actually to make some small but stable steps in the direction of making austerities or sacrifice in devotional life. Most of us are quite young in spiritual life still, But if we try to remember the first year we were in Krishna consciousness, or really our real beginning in Krishna consciousness, do you remember how we were so much eager to make sacrifice? Huh? Such a big sacrifice we could do because we could feel that's the right things. And in reciprocation to those sacrifices we will do, Krishna will give so many rewards, so many experience, spiritual experience, so much taste was coming due to those sacrifices we will do. But as the year pass, sometimes devotee lose a little bit that attitude of making sacrifice. Often we think, okay, now I am initiated. Now I have my second initiation. Now I'm quite satisfied. People like me. I have some type of position in the institution. So, okay, that's all. That's done. Huh? No need to sacrifice more of my life. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami explained that when the devotee comes to that stage where he do not want to invest more, he will slowly, slowly lose taste. He's giving the analogy of going to school. He said the first year you go to school, everything is very easy. You sing, you do some drawing, there is no homework, the teacher is very, very kind. But as more as you go through the school, through your learning, as more actually you will have to invest of yourself. You will have to sacrifice more of yourself. You will have to take more time in order to advance. So in spiritual life also is like this, until we reach the spiritual world. And even there, it's not sacrifice anymore because it's really connected with the taste. But the devotees are totally surrender. They are at all time ready to give more and more and more. And Krishna, he is very tricky. And he is asking for more and more and more from his devotees. Even when the devotees think, now that's the limit, I cannot give anything more, Krishna is still asking for more. There is no limit in the spiritual dimension. We cannot say, now I reached it. No, that's ever expanding. So we have also the example of Lord Brahma. In the beginning of the creation, Lord Brahma was sitting on the lotus, a beautiful lotus coming from the navel of Lord Vishnu. But he did not know really what was his mission. So he was meditating. How he was pondering, what should I do now? And then he heard a voice. The voice was saying, you have to perform tapasya. You have to perform austerities. Or, in other words, you have to make a certain type of sacrifice. So Brahma entered into this deep meditation and then got the entire knowledge how he what was needed for him to do and how to do it to manifest the creation. So that was a very old example. Now I would like to take a younger example, and that's the example of Srila Prabhupada. How much sacrifice did Srila Prabhupada do to start this movement for Krishna consciousness? Some of you might have visited Vrindavan, and there in Vrindavan you can feel how the atmosphere is sweet. How it is good to be in Vrindavan and perform devotional service. Srila Prabhupada was staying in Radha Damodar temple. He was in this room. He was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion. He was experiencing so much deep devotional feeling in his heart. But he left all of that to come in New York, to come in a place which is totally the opposite, which is such a hell, just as a sacrifice to fulfill the mission of his spiritual master. One day I was in Krishna Balaram Mandir, and I had to make a phone call in those telephone rooms which are in the opposite. So I became friends with the manager of the telephone business, and then he started to praise his guru. And he said, "My guru never left Vrindavan. He never left the place where he is staying. My guru never touched money with his fingers. He's so great." And I said, "Yeah, that's really a great example. But my guru, he took the austerity to leave Vrindavan to save all of us. He was not mining to touch money because he was using that in Krishna consciousness." So here we have a tremendous example that Srila Prabhupada did just as a service for his Guru Maharaj and as compassion for all suffering living entities. So much sacrifice were able to do the disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada has such loving Shakti that whoever was in contact with him just wanted to surrender, were just ready to do anything he wanted. They were just ready. Once they were traveling on the train, that was the first time Srila Prabhupada brought his disciple to India. So they were in the train and they were arriving in Calcutta. And in the train, they met a businessman. And this businessman was speaking with Prabhupada, and he said, "I'm living in Calcutta, but it's so sad, there is no temple in Calcutta." And when they reached the train station, Prabhupada told two or three of his devotees, "Now you go down and you make a temple here." They were shocked. "We have to leave Prabhupada association, and we don't speak Hindi, and Prabhupada, we don't know anyone in Calcutta, and Prabhupada wants us to go down right now from the train to open a temple." They did. They just went down the train. That was the instruction of their spiritual master. They immediately did it. And they were successful because they were following, they were taking the instruction of their spiritual master as life and soul. Also, once when they were in this train in India, Prabhupada asked, "I would like to have some rice." So Yamuna went to the compartment of the train where they were cooking, and she said, "I need to cook some rice." And they say, "Forget it. If you want, you can buy some rice. We are cooking the rice. But forget it that you will come and cook the rice." So Yamuna said, "My spiritual master is a Mahabhagavat. He cannot eat food that is cooked by persons who are not pure, or who are not bhaktas, who are not devotees of the Lord. I cannot give them this rice. I have to cook it myself." And you know how they are in India. Say, "Okay, so no rice. You don't want to take that, that's that, or that's nothing." And Yamuna said, "If it's like this, I jump out of the train." And she went close to the door, and she was ready. She said, "If you don't allow me to cook, I will kill myself. I'll just jump out of the train." And the man said, okay, you come, you do your rice. Don't make any trouble to us now." But the devotees were really ready to do any type of sacrifice to please Srila Prabhupada. Some years ago, my spiritual master had to follow a treatment, a health treatment in Russia. So we were for 1.5 months in a small house in Russia, and we were living in the lady who was giving the treatments. Her name is Krishna Priya, and she's really tough. I mean, she's a blind person, and she's moving the organs inside the body to place them. So her treatments are really tough treatments. And in that house, she had a small machine, or something like machine, that's like a piece this big, and there are rows. And instead of being flat, it's slowly slided like this, and you walk on it. And by walking on those rolls, you get a certain type of feet massage, which is actually very healthy. And there is something to hold your hand. So when Maharaj tried that, he said, wow, these things is making such a good effect on my body. So he asked me, please try to get one that we bring with us to Germany. So I did not speak Russian, and in Russia almost nobody speaks English, so I had to go through the husband of Krishna Priya, Gadadhar Pandit Prabhu, who was speaking English. So I asked him, where do we buy this machine? And he looked at me with a small smile, and he said, forget it. We bought this machine 25 years ago. Now, you have no chance to find this machine. So I had to push, all the time to push. It must be possible. Let's ask all the hospital here, if maybe they have one in one of the hospital. Then I had to ask him, maybe we have to go to a factory with that machine and ask them to build the same one. And for 2 weeks, I had to push. And he was all the time saying, forget it, it will not be possible. And after each obstacle, he was telling me, see, it's not possible, you will not find it. After 2.5 weeks, it happened that another patient of Krishna Priya had actually this machine in her home. And she was actually wanting to sell that machine to us. So finally, Krishna rewarded my endeavors and the machine was there. Although it looks to be totally impossible to get those machines anymore. So when I brought the machine back to my spiritual master, he was actually very happy. And I told him how difficult it was to go through all those obstacles. And then he said, yeah, nowadays, devotees are very easily discouraged. And as soon as there is one or two obstacles, they just give up. But in the time of Prabhupada, if Prabhupada wanted something, we were all totally ready and totally dedicated to find it immediately, no matter what, no matter which obstacles. So this is connected to the type of sacrifice that one will do according to the service to his spiritual master. The sacrifice Prabhupada made to bring the Krishna consciousness movement was a sacrifice to fulfill the order of his spiritual master. Now I would like to ask you a question. What sacrifice are you willing to do? I know that you are already doing a lot of sacrifice and I don't want to put any pressure. But if we want to go forward, we have to think of maybe something else we will need to sacrifice. Maybe some things lower or some things that is actually like an anchor that doesn't allow us to go front. Maybe there are things we should think of giving up so that we can progress further. So the question is, what is my next sacrifice? What sacrifice do I want to do for my spiritual progress, for my next step in devotional life? Sacrifice actually starts in the mind. It expresses often in an external way, but actually start inside of the mind. And basically, this is the sacrifice for our own self-interest. The sacrifice for our own endeavors to get sense gratification. And everyone is actually attracted by beauty. Whatever we see beautiful will attract us. We will immediately think, how can I get it? That's normal. That's the law of the world. But this has to be actually sacrificed. We have to sacrifice this attitude of wanting things for us, for our own personal benefit, our own personal enjoyment, to turn it for the pleasure of Krishna. Like yesterday we were also hearing, there was also this point in the lecture. So whenever we see beauty, we want somehow to exploit it for our own self-interest. And if we go into the root of sacrifice, it will be actually to sacrifice the desire to enjoy separately from the Lord. We have to understand we do that for a higher goal. We have to understand, like you were asking this question yesterday, where do we find the strength to think in that way? We have to understand we will be rewarded so much more. There is an example given of a man who is living in a very poor village. So in order to provide sufficient foodstuff for his family, he's going to work in a town close by. And he's sleeping in a corridor of a place. He do not have a place to live. He's eating just few chickpeas every day. But he knows, I'm doing all those sacrifices because of that my children will be able to drink milk. So often sacrifices are going together with love. As more as one develops his love, as one more is able to sacrifice of himself for that object of love. All our selfish actions are actually binding us in the material world. And our selfless actions, they are giving us freedom from material entanglement. And now I would like to praise all of you, or most of you, for the sacrifice you are doing when you are going on book distribution. And this is a big sacrifice. This is really giving up all sense enjoyment. This is giving up all our prestige and all the position we think. All we think we are so good, we think we are so great, so strong. But when we are on the street with books, devotees understand there is only Krishna. That's only He who can do something. I have no strength, I have no abilities. So to do that sacrifice, to give up totally the ego, to be ready to be ill-treated by people, to be really in the jungle of material existence, that's such a sacrifice. And I can see all the devotees who are following those intense sacrifice time in their life, they are benefiting so much. They are making so much progress by this surrendering, by this sacrifice of being in such unfavorable place and trying to do service for their spiritual master. So I would like to take the opportunity to congratulate all of you who are taking that service and are doing that in such a steadily way, such a good way. You cannot even imagine how much blessings are coming. The whole parampara is just sending flow and flow of blessing. The whole parampara is actually watching us doing that service. It's really special, and yeah, I don't want to spread it too long, but my full respect to all of you who are doing that service. Now, I would like to make interesting point also. When we think of giving up things that maybe are not so much favorable for our spiritual life, sometimes we might do it in a wrong way. When we want to do some types of austerities or renunciation, often they are not done properly. Sometimes devotees do very strong fasts, very, very severe austerities to the body and the mind, but often it produces a wrong effect. Often they become proud of that, and that makes actually the totally opposite effect. They are taking all the fruits of their austerities for themselves, instead of offering that fruit of the sacrifice to Krishna. So it can be actually very dangerous to do too much austerity or wrong austerity. Sometimes in the Gaudiya Math, the devotees will fast totally nijal for all Ekadashi. And once Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati came and they saw they were all like this, and he said, "Now you just take prasad and you just go out and preach. What is your austerities is actually not allowing you to perform service. So service is more important. Devotion is more important than austerity. So whenever we want to do some type of sacrifice for our spiritual advancement, we have to make sure that they are properly done. We have to ask our authorities, we have to ask older devotees. And I can tell you, in my service with Sachinandana Swami, so many times he smashed me like anything when he saw that I was doing some austerities. So many times. I remember, in the Shastra you read that you should not eat before your spiritual master. So in the beginning I was following that principle. So one day he did not eat the whole day. We were traveling, driving by car. I had some first-class samosa prepared for the journey in the car. And in the afternoon, end of afternoon, around 5 o'clock, he said, "Kurahari, I did not see you eating." And I said, "Kumash, I wait that you first eat and then I will eat." He gave me such a sauce. He said, "You are crazy. You think you can do like me? You think you can be like me? You think you can do the same? I am not hungry. And you have to do service. You have to drive. And you are just trying to follow those rules." He said, you are crazy. You now immediately take your prasad." And so many times when I will tell him, "Oh, now, Kumash, I don't want to eat sweet anymore," he will also make so much fun of me. "Oh, you are so renounced. Oh, you are so great." He will make really fun of me. But one day, for example, he told me, "If you want to perform austerity, just go every morning to the Mangalarati. Just wake up early. This is a very healthy type of austerity." But also, if we put too much in the opposite, if we just sleep only 5 hours a night, or 4 hours, or sometimes even 6 hours a day, sometimes I'm not enough for some devotee. Some devotees sometimes they say, "Prabhupada wrote 6 hour minimum maximum, so we follow that standard." And we see many devotees there chanting and falling asleep again and again, not attentive in what they are doing, totally spaced out, because they just push themselves into an extreme that actually doesn't allow them to offer a quality service to their spiritual master, to Krishna. Some devotees, they are sometimes pushing themselves too much that they look like a pressure cooker, that you don't know at which time the things will just explode out of it. And often when there are this type of very, very rude, strong austerities, the devotee's heart become very hard. They become harsh with people. They become easily angry. How can devotion can be expressed in such a heart? So, any type of austerity we want to do, we have to be very careful. Never tell anyone. You can ask advice, but never make any show out of it. Otherwise, you just spoil all by getting proud of out of it. In one sense, our senses and mind will always be demanding for some type of sense enjoyment. And that's all right. It's not possible to cut off this demand of the sense. So it's all right to have some sense gratification, but it should be into a small amount. It should not be exaggerated. And the art is really to offer it to Krishna before. When we do like this, then we can enjoy. See what we are offering to Krishna. See the Mahaprasadam Krishna is giving us. It's not our philosophy that one should not enjoy. One should give satisfaction to the sense only with Mahaprasadam and in reasonable quantities. If we put our senses and emotions too much away, if we detach ourselves too much from emotion and senses, it's also impossible to practice bhakti. Because bhakti means involvement of our senses and emotions in Krishna's service. So if you are making the totally detachment, then the heart is hard. Then it's not possible actually to have access into bhakti. So, taking that in consideration, what sacrifice do I like to do for my spiritual advancement? We have to be very, very careful of the purpose, or the aim of our sacrifice. Once, I think 2 years ago, we were flying from India back to Germany, and we slept one night in Delhi. And that night was the night of Ekadashi, and the devotees of the temple would remain awake the whole night. Everyone, or almost everyone. They will sing, they will do slideshow, they will read, they will do everything somehow or other to keep awake, engaged in devotional service. So our flight was 3 o'clock in the night. So we had to leave around 1 from the temple. Oh, it was 4 o'clock. We had to leave around 1 o'clock. So we slept before. And then we woke up at 1 o'clock and we were leaving the temple. And Maharaj said, oh, let us just say goodbye to the devotees before we leave. So Maharaj came and said goodbye and they stopped the reading. And then Guru Maharaj addressed them. And the first thing he said, it's wonderful that you are doing this type of sacrifice, but do not try to get any power for yourself. Do that only to give pleasure to Krishna. Because if the purpose of our austerity or our sacrifice are not clearly put on giving pleasure to Krishna, it will have a negative effect. Proud will come in our heart. And proud, what is proud, is a demoniac mentality. It's a demoniac attribute. So by trying to do austerity, if we are not clearly fixed on offering that to Krishna, we will get some wrong result on ourselves. It will make such a big difference. But when it is turned properly, clearly turned toward Krishna, all our sacrifice will bring divine blessings. So much difference can be if our aim is not properly set in our mind. It is not exactly the sacrifice itself that will make most of the result, but it's more the consciousness that is underlying the sacrifice we are doing that will make a big difference. We have somehow or other to try to put Krishna in the center. Remember once we were driving very early in the morning from Switzerland to Zagreb. We had a long journey in front of us. I was alone with Satchinandana Swami, and first thing he did, he took the kartals and started to sing. The day was just coming, rising. And Maharaj was chanting kirtan, and I was repeating, he was singing, and then he stopped singing and he looked at me and he said, why you don't think of Krishna? Why you sing and you don't think of Krishna? And then I just realized, my God, I'm singing since 10 minutes and I did not think of Krishna. I'm actually almost like spoiling my time. Of course, some benefit is there, but I'm missing the whole point. Once also, there was a big, I think it was a Goa Punim festival in India. And there was at the same time a GBC meeting. All the GBC's gurus of ISKCON were there. And someone brought a picture to Srila Prabhupada, and there was a picture of a public program or a preaching event they did in that temple. And on the picture you could see there was a lady dancing. And she was turning her back to the deities. So Prabhupada looked at the picture and he said, why is the dancer turning the back to the deity? So the devotee tried to give explanation. Well, we had so many guests. She had to perform for the guests first, then for the deities. But all the time Prabhupada will not accept. Whatever this devotee was trying to defend, he will always keep, why is the dancer turning her back to the deities? And then he said, now I want all the GBCs here. I want all the sannyasis here in my room, right now. You go and bring everyone here. And when everyone was here, Prabhupada showed them the picture and was keeping on asking, why is the dancer turning her back to the deities? And Prabhupada wanted to make a point. Of course, when there are a big audience, the dancer should face the audience. That's logical. But Prabhupada wanted to make a point that in everything we are doing, Krishna should be in the center. He is the beneficiary of all our activities. He will receive those giviks that you are making now. That something should be in our consciousness while we are performing Krishna, that he is actually the ideal person to be in the center. We are not so glorious to be put in the center, but Krishna, he is the person who should be put in the center. Srila Satchinandana Swami also gave a lecture that was connected with sacrifice. He gave that lecture in Vrindavan this year. So I took some of those points also from the lecture, and at the time he explained, where will we find the strength to practice, to make some sacrifice in our life? And then he said that's the Svarup Shakti of the Lord that will give us the strength. And Svarup Shakti of the Lord is Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani, close to us, is our spiritual master. From there, we will get the strength. We will get the strength through service, through following what he is asking us. From there, the strength is coming. The strength is basically coming through service. Why is Balaram so strong? Because he's all the time in service. All the time. He's expanding in all the paraphernalia to serve Krishna. He's all the time thinking how to serve Krishna. And because of that attitude of service, Balaram is Bala, is strong. Because of that service, service, service. So through service to the spiritual master, we get this strength for making new steps in spiritual life, for making sacrifice. And this is also a very good question we can ask to our spiritual master. What do you think is an appropriate sacrifice I can do now in my life? That's actually a very good question we can ask. That shows we want to make new steps. And the spiritual master, who can see much better our position, can actually give us a very good tip of how we can make new steps or new sacrifice in our devotional life. So I would like to end by telling you a little story from the Mahabharata. When Yudhishthira Maharaj decided to perform an Ashwamedha Yagya, a Yagya, horse Yagya, that's really super elaborate Yagya. Takes a long time to perform. It's super expensive. Really, the Maha Yagya from Tetra Yuga? Was it in Tetra Yuga they would perform Yagya?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it was, the story was not in Tetra Yuga, but it was like in the style of the Tetra Yuga. Really, the super opulent Yagya. So it was said that if the Yagya will be successful, a conch shell will be blown by itself. Nobody will blow on it. The conch shell will be making the sound of the conch shell, and that will be the sign the Yagya is accepted. The Yagya is successful. So at the end of the Yagya, they made a big feast, and they invited all sadhus to come and take the feast. But the conch shell was not blowing. So Yudhishthira went to Krishna and said, Krishna, what do we do now? After such big endeavors, months and months of austerities, of prayers, of arrangements, and the conch shell is not blowing. So Krishna said, there is one Vaishnava who was not fed. There was one Vaishnava who did not get the feast. Find that Vaishnava and you have to nourish him. So Yudhishthira went all around to find that Vaishnava. And when he found that Vaishnava, he said, why? Why you did not come to take the feast? And the sadhu said, well, I don't need such opulent food. I'm satisfied with... And Yudhishthira said, our Yagya is not successful as long as you don't eat from us. Please come, Draupadi has cooked now a very good feast. You come now and please accept our offering. So the simple Vaishnava thought, okay, I have to do it. So he went and Draupadi served him with many, many very opulent foodstuffs. And the Brahmana just mixed everything together. At the style of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, and started to eat. And when Draupadi saw that, she made an apparat in her mind. She made a Vaishnava apparat. She thought, such uncultured Vaishnava. I cooked so much, he's spoiling all. He will not get the taste of everything. He's just doing like this. And of course, after the Brahmana had eaten, still the conch was not drinking, blowing. So again, Yudhishthira went back to Krishna and said, what's happening now? And Krishna said, Draupadi, she made apparat in her mind. That's the reason. So Draupadi had to cook again, and the Brahmana to come again. This time she made a simple khichdi. She did not bother. And the Brahmana took. And after that, the conch shell was blown by itself. And at that time, the Yagya was ending. And I think here we come back very much close to that verse where we see that because Lord Shiva was not there, the sacrifice could not be performed. So, in other words, without the satisfaction of the devotees, our yagyas cannot really bear fruits. Our sankirtan yagya can be fruitful only when there is very, very good care, when there is no aparad between the devotees, when there is such a care and support between everyone, then the yagya is really super successful. But if we quarrel between each of us, if we criticize each of us, or if we don't care of others who have difficulties in spiritual life, how can a yagya be successful? Lord Krishna said, if one try to worship me but neglect other Vaishnavas, his yagya is like offering ghee to ashes. There is no benefit. All worship we are doing to Krishna, if we neglect to help and care for other devotees who are around us, is like ghee offered to ashes. So here is very, very strong point. And I think Radhanath Swami, Niranjana Maharaj, they give us such good example of what means Vaishnava community, what means caring for other Vaishnavas. My spiritual master try also to inspire us to go in that direction of caring for others. In the Vyasa Puja celebration you had some days ago in the disciple meeting, he spoke on that point. And then he said, most of us, we are like this. We are just looking eye at Krishna. But we are not looking around us. We are not looking, we are not aware of those who need support, of those who need help. We are just looking me at Krishna. We are forgetting all the devotees around us. There was, because it's Sum Gopunin, I take the 10 last minutes to tell a little pastime of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is connected to that. Lord Chaitanya was never accepting to be seen as God. Whenever they will chant his name, he will chastise them. There are some place in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Ramananda Roy is conversing with Rupa Goswami. And Ramananda Roy said, please tell me about your writings. And that's the writings of Vidakta Madhava and Lalita Madhava of Rupa Goswami. And sometimes Ramananda Roy said, please now read a verse in praise of your Ishtadev. And always Rupa Goswami said, I'm not sure if it's good. He's very shy because he knows Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there. And his Ishtadev is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So even Mahaprabhu said, please tell the glorification of your Ishtadev. So very shyly Rupa Goswami start to praise the glories of Sachi, Nandan, Gaurahari, about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu externally become very angry, but internally is very, very happy. So all the time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not be showing any appreciation when devotees will glorify him as God. But one day, in order to serve his devotees, Lord Chaitanya sat on the altar and he said, now you please sing my Abhishek song. And everyone went, wow, what? Finally, Lord Chaitanya accepts he is God and accepts that we worship him. So the devotees were making a big queue until the Ganga, and they would bring big water pot to perform the Abhishek. Everyone was in total ecstasy. Everyone was just out of mind. They were just totally in bliss. They were worshipping Lord Chaitanya. They would offer Abhishek to him. And after that, they offer a feast, and Lord Chaitanya was eating and eating and eating again. And everyone was just so happy. Now, at that time, after the feast, something very special happened. Welcome. Willkommen. Something very special happened. Lord Chaitanya gave very exalted blessings to his devotees. What he did, invited each one of the devotees to come in front of him, and he revealed to them what was their eternal form, what was their Svarup in the spiritual world. So when Murari Gupta came, he told him, "You are Hanuman." When Sridhar, Kolavecha Sridhar came, he told him, "You are this cowboy." I think Sridham, not sure. But he was actually revealing the highest truth to all his devotees. Can you imagine how the devotees must have felt? How devotees must have been in bliss in that time. Now there was one devotee, Mukunda, who was outside. He was waiting outside. So the devotees told, "My Lord, Mukunda is outside. You did not call him. Please call him." The Lord said, "No, I cannot call Mukunda. Because when Mukunda, he is together with the impersonal school, he's saying God has no form, God has no senses. But when he's coming with us, he's saying, oh yeah, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not true, he's not truthful. He has some kapatya, some cheating in his heart. Therefore, he cannot come." Now, the devotees, they were feeling the greatest ecstasy. They were receiving the highest blessings, but they were concerned about Mukunda. And they started to plead to Lord Chaitanya, "Please, please, do something for Mukunda. Please accept him. Please do something." Can you imagine? If you are getting such a highest bliss, will you think of Mukunda? Huh? You will think, "No, Mukunda, he's not proper in his behavior. It's okay, he has to stay out. I get all the blessings. I get all the mercy." But the devotees were not able to appreciate such a big mercy they were receiving from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because they were suffering from Mukunda's story. They were suffering to see that Mukunda was not allowed to come to the Lord. So they were pleading to the Lord, "Please, please accept Mukunda to come." Lord Chaitanya said no. So they went to Mukunda and they said, "We are so sorry, the Lord do not want to see you anymore." Then Mukunda asked, When will my Lord give me darshan again? When will my Lord allow me to see him again?" So the devotee went back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, "Mukunda asked, when? When will you see him again?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "In millions of years." The devotee went back to Mukunda and said, "The Lord said, only in few million years will the Lord see you again." Now, if you would hear that, how would you feel? Little depressed, maybe. "Oh my God, we are all hoping we will make it this lifetime. And now we will hear, we need to wait millions of years until we can see the Lord." But Mukunda reacted in a very different way. Mukunda became ecstatic. He started to dance and jump. "I will see him! I will see him! Only in millions of years, I will see him! I will see him!" And he was dancing and chanting and he was in ecstasy. So the devotees went back and told that to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu said, "Bring him now. Bring him now to him." So the devotee went to Mukunda and said, "Mukunda, Mukunda, the Lord wants to see you now." And Mukunda was so in ecstasy, he could not hear. in millions of years, in millions of years. And the devotees go, now, now you can see now, in millions of years. He just could not go down of his ecstasy. So these pastimes show that although the devotees were getting the highest bliss, they were receiving the highest, their own eternal spiritual identity were revealed to them. But they were feeling sad for Mukunda. They were pleading to the Lord. And this is a very, very good example. In all Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya is teaching us through example, Vaishnava relationship. Relationship with Vaishnavas. And because now Gopurnim is coming, we can think of a gift we want to offer to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's his birthday. Huh? We should not go to a birthday without gifts. So, a very good birthday present to Lord Chaitanya is to take a firm decision in our heart that we will work very, very consciously on our relationships with other Vaishnava. That we will try to care for them. That we will give up any criticizing of other Vaishnavas. This can be such a beautiful present to the Lord, to see that we are taking the gifts He is giving to, He is coming to give us, that we are actually taking that gift with our full heart. And that's our reciprocation to His gift. Huh? If I offer a new chador to you as a gift, but I see you never wear it, I will feel, oh my God, I will never give him any chador anymore. But I see you wear it, I feel happy, I feel he reciprocates with my gift. So Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving such a beautiful gift. And he's mentioning, through this Vaishnava relationship, there only we go to Krishna. If we miss that point, we miss the whole point. It's like the ghee offered to ashes. So we can, for the birthday of Lord Chaitanya, we can meditate on maybe working or begging his help, his support, so that we can actually become very conscious in our dealings with Vaishnava. Supporting them, serving them, never making any pain, any criticizing mood, judging or anything like this. Sorry, I become a little alive. That's very, very nice topic. That's very dear to my heart also. So, I think time has come. Like Bhakti Swarup Damodar was saying, time is also there. So I don't know if you have maybe questions or comments. Or if we should just go directly to the breakfast part. Yeah, Sampo.
I would like to ask, it seems that the whole point is sincerity in Buddhahood.
Mm-hmm.
And the deepest root.
Mm-hmm.
And so where it comes from. So how to develop?
Hmm.
Also, it scheint so, dass in Buddhahood eigentlich alles darum geht, um die Aufrichtigkeit nach dem Herzen und wo das herkommt und wie man das entwickeln kann.
Mm-hmm. By living examples. Or by example. When Prabhupada came to New York, people who were around him were just hippies. Most of them were under LSD, and they just could not understand much of what Prabhupada was saying. But because Prabhupada was such a loving person, was such spiritually glowing, that although they just could not understand, they were ready to surrender to him. They were ready to start their spiritual life. So by seeing the sincerity of Prabhupada in his own living, in his own life, they became sincere by seeing that. So by seeing how our spiritual masters are sincere in their devotional life, how they are totally devoted to what they are doing, to see how they have given their full life for that. This should be our help. This should be what brings us this sincerity, by their example, one will feel, I also want to become like them. This is the perfect example. This is what I'm looking for. And then we can follow in the footsteps. And here I would say, whenever we are in close connection to our spiritual masters, it's very, very, very important that we very carefully observe them. That we just don't see on the external level, but that we see, we observe like a detective. We observe how they glorify Krishna, how they are serving the Vaishnavas, what is in their hearts, what is the jewel that they have in their hearts. And this is such amazing, powerful help for us to become sincere. Yeah, by the association of sincere devotees, we get this sincerity. We want to become like them. We are convinced. We have practical example of what it means to be truly happy. And we want also that. That's what everyone wants. It's so good also to read Prabhupada Lilamrita, to read the life of our acharyas. This we get so much just by being in contact with the sincerity of those sages. We just want to become like this. It's just encouraging to also become like this. So through Sangha, through association with sincere devotees, then you get it.
Can I question further? How I can get the eyes to observe? Because, you know, everyone has Sangha or read Prabhupada. It's not, the result maybe is not always the same. So how to get the eyes to the interest to observe?
Could be different answer. One, chant Hare Krishna, and you become purified. And by becoming purified, your vision becomes purified, and then you can see. I will give you another answer. The answer is tune yourself. Before a sadhu comes, before you are directly in connection with those devotees, tune yourself. Think in your mind, okay, now it's a special time. Now I will be in contact with a special person. Let me try to observe him. You just tune yourself. And then when you are in this circumstance, you can act and you can receive the eyes. Because Krishna sees your desire inside, so he can give you the eyes. I see myself in my spiritual life, after 5 years of service with my Guru Maharaj, I came to a point that I was highly challenged, and I felt my vision was completely inappropriate. I was becoming too much close, too much like he's my friend, and I just could not behave properly. So I read few books on Guru Tattva principle, and I will read, and then I will go to do service. And when I will go to do service, I was tuned into that vision of the spiritual master, which is the Guru Tattva, in the true vision of who is really. And when you are in that tuning, you are coming in connection with your Guru Maharaj, then you have really another perception. And then you get really the gift of the Sangha. So tune yourself before entering into the Sangha. Pray that you can have the eyes. Pray that you can get the gifts the sadhus can give you. And then you will get it. It's not a good question. Okay. So I think time for breakfast has come. Oh, anything else? That's Prabhupada's mercy, our Guru Maharaj, Lord Jagannath. He's doing everything. He's the marionette player. He's the one who is doing everything. We are just somehow trying to become instruments to some extent. So I thank you for your kind attention. Nobody was sleeping. Everyone was there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Jagannath Balade Subhadada Devi ki jai. Shishu Gaur Nitai ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai.